Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
Well, welcome back to Zero Block 30. It's me, your boy, Uncle Chaps. I'm joined, as always, by Captain Khan. How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing very well, Chaps. How are you today?
Doing great, man. Last week was a good episode. I think all the episodes are good. I need to stop saying that because I'm just starting off every episode like, we had a good episode, man. Like, I just like to pat myself on the back because I've noticed that there hasn't been very many recent reviews on Zero Block 30 on iTunes. So if you're listening and you haven't reviewed, go do that. And over the course of the next couple weeks, if you leave a fire review on iTunes, I'll send you a Zero Block 30 shirt before it launches.
Whoa.
I'll take the best five Zero Block 30 comments on iTunes, and I will send you a shirt. And I'll even pay for the shirt, so Barstool doesn't have to do it. I'll pay for it and send it to your house.
Wow. Spoiler. We got shirts coming.
That's the Chaps promise. Yeah, we got shirts coming. We got merch coming. We got big things coming down the line. One of the big things is that we're going to be doing is me and Connor are going to go back to Connor's old stomping grounds. You want to tell them about that, Connor?
Yeah, so you guys are listening to this, and on Saturday, November 5th, Army is playing Air Force up at West Point, and Chaps and I decided let's take the show on the road. We're going to head up to West Point, going to go to the game, have a few beers, and then after the game, we are going to record that week's episode of Zero Blog 30 from the parking lot. So if you are listening, you want to come hang out, check us out. We'll be up in C Lot up at West Point. I think there might be a few tickets available. Go to SeatGeek and check out the Army Air Force ticket situation and get up there and come check us out. Say what's up to us in the parking lot. We'd love to see you guys.
So we're just a few short days away from the election season, which I cannot wait for. But we try not to be too partisan, even though we are kind of partisan, I think. I think people mainly, for the most part, know our takes at this point. Mm. But one nonpartisan issue that came up this week was the issue of what California's National Guard is requiring of some of their members who received reenlistment bonus. Now, Connor was an officer, so he didn't get reenlistment bonuses because he's not an enlisted dude, right? So he just is just basically straight up contract. I mean, they paid for his education at West Point, which is a pretty good education to have. Decent. So I guess he got his money's worth there. But I'll give my reenlistment bonus story, my favorite one, before we jump into what actually happened in California. Because reenlistment bonuses should be surrounded by nothing but happy memories. Like, because you work your ass off for 4 years, sometimes 6 years, to get these reenlistment bonuses. So here's mine. I've told before how I used to go on like presidential security and presidential details and things like that. Well, we were in New York, me and my buddy Doc. We were in New York, and we were both doing presidential security. We had went to the Lincoln Center and were providing security there. We met some celebrities like John Legend and Bruce Springsteen, and Billy Joel was there playing the piano. And we did all the things. We got to meet President Obama. We go to his – or he was President-elect Obama at the time. We went to his dressing room and things like that. It was a crazy night. Then we were done. Me and Doc were actually released from duty at like 10 o'clock at night. So we go from there. We go to a bar in New York. And we were still like pretty poor enlisted dudes. I think I was an E5, which is a sergeant, and he was an E4 corporal. So we weren't making a whole ton of money, but and New York drinks are expensive.
Very.
So we get there. Yeah. So we get there and we sit next to this dude who's like dressed like fancy as fuck, you know, like he's like a New York, probably works where you work now, Connor, that kind of thing.
Probably. So you're saying he's a handsome fellow.
Yeah, he's a handsome guy, well-dressed individual, much like yourself. So we were sitting there, and the dude goes, I mean, obviously we're in New York, and we have our ridiculous Marine haircuts, just like high and tights and shit, because they forced the tube before we went on presidential security. So we're sitting there, he's like, what do you boys do? And we're like, oh, we're both Marines. And it was around Fleet Week time, I think. There was some big Navy event. He's like, oh, I've seen a lot of Navy dudes, but not too many Marines. I was like, yeah, we're here for presidential security, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh, hell yeah. And he looks to the bartender and he's like, whatever they're having tonight, it's on me. Put it on my tab. They can drink as much as they want. It's on me. And so my buddy Doc was like, fuck, dude, you don't want to do that. Not with us two.
That's kind of like last week you were talking and telling that sergeant, like, nah, you don't want to smell that bucket.
Yeah, dude, it's basically the same thing. So he's like, and the waitress or the bartender is like, "He trust me, he can handle it." And he's like, you guys look like you're some good dudes. He's like, do you want to party with me tonight? And the bartender was like, say yes. So we were like, hell yeah. And he's like, we didn't have to be at work the next day till like 7 o'clock in the evening. So I'm like, fuck yeah, let's do it. Because he asked me, he's like, Sergeant, can we do it? And I was like, yeah.
You sure he wasn't just hitting on you? I mean,
could have been. Yeah. I was fine with it. But
okay,
but
hey, why not?
Let the story develop.
My bad.
So we were sitting there. And he was like, you know, we had taken a couple shots of Patron, and he goes, you guys like your girls like really slutty, kind of slutty, or just a little bit slutty? And I'm thinking like, well, we're in New York, so I'll go kind of slutty, because I mean, kind of slutty in New York is probably pretty good. So he's like, all right, let's go. So we go outside. He has like a car like waiting out there. He stops and just pulls out a rack of cash from this ATM, and we go to the Hustlers Club. He's bringing like – we have – three dudes in there, probably 15 girls in the champagne room, and it's just like the most insane night ever. Like the night ended up so crazy that I ended up crawling back to my hotel room at 51st and Lexington at the DoubleTree at like 3 a.m. crawling by, and like business dudes were up already, like drinking their coffees and shit, getting ready to get their grind on. And I look at the girl at the front desk and I'm like, hey, give me one of those warm cookies, because you know.
Yeah, DoubleTree always has those good cookies,
and they're good as fuck, right?
Yep.
So I somehow make it back to my hotel room. I wake up the next morning, and the very first thing that I think is what? What do you normally think after a night of drinking?
Where's my wallet? Where's my phone?
Yeah, where's my wallet? Like, how much money did I spend tonight?
Yeah.
So the very first thing that I do is I call. Like, I get my cell phone. I call my bank to check what my balance is, because I was a young single dude, single father. I was like, fuck, man, I hope I didn't spend a rake of money.
I didn't spend my daughter's food money.
Yeah, I wake up and $38,000 more was in my bank account because my reenlistment bonus hit.
Oh, wow.
So all that night, reenlistment bonus hits, and I'm just like, thank God I signed up for 4 more years or I'd be a broke motherfucker right now.
That is a hell of a treat.
Yeah, man, it was pretty good. So that's what reenlistment bonus experience should be like. They should be like, I am poor, at least for the next couple of weeks until I spend this money very irresponsibly. I'm not going to be poor for at least a couple of weeks. That's how it usually goes. But we brought back on our boy Riggs, Big J Riggs, Big Journalism Riggs, the human jack-o'-lantern himself, to talk about what's actually going on in California. Welcome back to Zero Block 30, Riggs.
It's good to be here. Riggsy's back. Thanks for having me, boys. I do want to start by saying I think that we need a better outro for Riggsy next week. Last week, I listened to last week's episode, and it was very funny how I was just talking. I was in the mix. We're having a good chat. And then it almost was like I was there for 45 minutes, but I just didn't say anything, which came off incorrectly because I was just gone. So we probably need to come up with a better outro for Riggsy next week.
Riggsy's very concerned about his reputation as the Harvard grad. He should have had something to contribute to the conversation if he was there for 45 minutes.
I didn't want people to think I was just chilling there without anything to say.
Yeah, and that's
on me. I think I clapped too early. I gave it to the dude who cuts it up. I gave it to old Josh, and I was like, hey, dude, here's the points. But this time, you want a song? I'll pick a song for you.
Ooh, okay. Can I get a song?
Ooh, that could be
cool.
Yeah,
we'll do a Riggs outro song.
Yeah, I want a song, but I think you're right. I think it's better if someone else picks it. I don't want to pick it.
Yeah, well, you can't pick it yourself, then it's not your song. It's just like,
right, you can't give yourself your own nickname. Same type of deal.
Same deal, yeah. We'll think of it. We'll outro you properly this week.
I can't wait. I'm pumped.
So what's happening in California, Rick?
So it's a it's a wild story. A lot of people are extremely pissed off about this story. It starts back kind of the peak time for the Iraq war, war on terror, where the U.S. would stretch pretty thin. 2006, when we were, it goes back to California, California National Guardsmen. These guys essentially are gigantic salesmen, right? They have to reach a certain amount of quota of recruits. And when it gets hectic, when it gets tough, in order to meet those quotas, these guys were doing pretty scumbaggish moves, which was basically offering bonuses to recruits and reenlistment bonuses to guys that were active that they were not authorized to do so. These things went through. They were completely unauthorized. Generally around $15,000. What happened was, if you look at the numbers, in 2007, the requested military budget was $699 billion. So these things obviously slipped through the cracks. Now, those men and women, most of them retired, but some of them still active, are being forced to repay those bonuses plus interest. So there's a couple different families. One, I believe, 24-year veteran was the wife of the military. The other one was a 30-year veteran, and they're paying upwards of $1,000 a month to repay their bonuses, which is absolutely ridiculous. And there's another family who was paying $1,300 a month and was hit with a $47,000 total recoup that they have to pay. Obviously, this ruffled a lot of feathers. People are pissed about this. You know, veteran military families can't afford to frickin' put food on the table because they have to recoup and repay these bonuses that were somehow falsified. That obviously should never happen. So we had the Secretary of Defense came up today and said, we're putting an end to this. We're going to put it at least, we're going to suspend it, trying, I guess, to shut people up, make people quiet. However, he included that it's very likely that not everyone will, you know, be omitted from this, and there will be service members that will have to continue to repay the bonuses. It's a really shitty situation. It's ruining a lot of people's lives, and it sucks.
Yeah, big time. I mean, just to give some context too, you know, Riggs, you mentioned like 2006, 2007. So that's right at the height of the surge, as it was called. President Bush determined with his military leaders that, all right, the
fantastic
way...
Fantastic distinction. Yeah, that's a great distinction.
Yeah. We need to make progress in Iraq. How do we do it? All right, we're going to influx 20,000 soldiers, which is roughly five brigades worth of soldiers. Now, you can't just take everyone that's back home in the United States and say, oh, okay, well, we'll just send everybody. You need specific people. So that's where these incentives came from for these guys that were maybe going to get out. All right, hey, we need you. And if you stay, we'll give you this money. And it was almost
of that. And a lot of that was because the enlisted dudes who were getting those bonus were incredibly skilled. Like guys who worked with me. Yeah, sure. I got $38,000 or $32,000, whatever the fuck it was. I don't remember the exact number. But if you did a job like me, you could get out, do contracting, and make upwards of 200 grand easily, easily at 9 months. Then you're required to stay outside of the United States for like 3 months so you don't have to pay taxes on it. But you're essentially doing tax-free shit for $250,000 for 9 months out of the year for doing the same job for the most part that you were doing for 50 grand a year.
And what's crazy too, though, is like when you know, like, all right, I'm signing up. I'm reenlisting for X amount more years. I'm essentially signing up to go back to war. So those bonuses are very much warranted because, again, you are further putting your life in harm's way. So for them to then come back and say, ah, sorry, we're going to need that money back because somebody screwed up, is just a horrible situation that I feel terrible for these guys.
Right, and I would say, you know, as a citizen, you know, it's shocking the massive disconnect between what all of us citizens look at. You know, we always respect the shit out of the military and everybody that's served, and we always support the troops to the nth degree. And then all of a sudden these types of stories come out, and you know people are trying to hide it. I believe the Secretary of Defense said, you know, he's known about it for about 2 years. They obviously don't want this to come out. They obviously know that it kills recruiting going forward. It has a horrendous look, which sucks because if there's anything that, you know, troops, veterans, guys like you deserve, which you get a lot of, it's praise, it's respect. It's people coming up to you at the airport and saying, hey, man, thanks a lot. You guys are fucking awesome. You do a lot more you know, and you risk a lot more than we do. And then all of a sudden we find out we're making these people pay plus interest for the bonuses that we gave them. It's very frustrating. I think it's a good reason that people were pissed off about it.
Yeah, what you said about the plus interest and even the entire sum is nothing compared to what the Department of Defense budget is.
Yeah.
It is absolutely nothing.
And they've recouped, I mean, they've just recouped $22 million. And like I said, just in 2007 alone, it was $699 billion. That's literally nothing.
Yeah, so this, one of the things that I saw that really made me upset about it too was whenever they're going through all these different numbers, people don't really often realize how much veterans make. Like, so if you're getting $21,000 recouped, the average veteran, according to the last census in 2015, the last data that's available, the average veteran makes $31,000 a year. $31,000, which is slightly above the national poverty line. And it's actually above the normal citizen. But a guy or girl that was in the National Guard, getting $21,000 taken back is almost taking two-thirds of a year of a salary. That is insane.
And most of them only had 3 years to pay it, and they told all kinds of stories and anecdotes about how strict and harsh and ruthless the people were when they came for that money, which is just absurd. And I think, you know, it's good that those stories are being put out and that people are hearing about them, but it's unbelievably frustrating for people to hear
and
that.
That is 100% a side effect of the way the VA really fucks up in the way that they treat veterans. Because, for example, I have to go a few times every year to get reevaluated for a traumatic brain injury. If I don't go, they stop payments on my retirement pay. So if I don't go, every single cent that I'm supposed to earn, they won't pay me if I miss two appointments in a row, which is absolutely insane. When you're going for an appointment that you have because you don't have short-term memory. So people who have much worse traumatic brain injuries than me are getting payments stopped on their benefits because they can't remember to go to an appointment that the VA sets 3 months in advance. That's ridiculous.
It's disheartening. And you mentioned, you know, the lengths that they're going to recoup this money, talking about putting liens on people's houses. Chaps, you just said it. This guy's making $31,000 a year. He's struggling probably to pay his mortgage, put food on the table for his family. And now you're going to tell me I got to cut this other check every month? That's just asinine to me.
Right.
And especially too, when you think about it, just from a number standpoint, when you consider how many guys reenlisted for these bonuses, I have to imagine that when they went back on that next deployment, whether it was their second, third, fourth, whatever, there's a good chance that a good portion of them then came back with an injury. Could have been healthy, reenlisted, got that bonus, went for their next deployment, and then something happened. So now on top of your injury, you're being told I have to pay money back? No, get out of my face.
And can you talk about how Congress kind of reacted a little bit, Riggs?
Yeah, and so Congress, it's frustrating too, and it pisses me off to read that because you've got, you know, California, the National Guard basically saying, yeah, you know, even if we tried to essentially suspend the recoup or even repay the money that has been recouped, we don't have the power to do it. And then you've got the Department of Defense saying, yeah, we're not 100% sure it's legal, but all of a sudden the Secretary of Defense is coming out being like, well, I'm a hero. I'm actually going to suspend it. There are different...
But suspend is a key word because he said they're going to readdress it in January.
Right. When Congress comes back.
And right. And so it's essentially this, which is what always pisses people off about politics, about Congress, is it's just pushing it aside. Oh, we'll deal with it. You know, we'll deal with it after the election is basically what these fucking guys are saying, which, again, is unbelievably frustrating. And to speak to what you were saying earlier, chaps, it's, you know, those types of anecdotes about what you have to do to get what you're owed for the sacrifices that you make. We don't know that. Me as a non-military guy, like, I don't know that type of shit. That type of shit's not sexy. That type of shit doesn't make headlines. So hearing those types of things, adding that to this entire story, that pisses people off. Me as a citizen, knowing what you guys have done, that's so infuriating.
Because even when they say that they're going to stop actively going after somebody, for all the people that had to refinance their homes It doesn't fucking change anything.
Doesn't
they
help
still
them
have
at
to
all.
Redo their mortgage, mm-hmm. man. Like mm-hmm. people are not—they're not going to get back pay on that. So the people yep. that were actually up front got those bills and were like, "I'm going to do the honorable thing here and give the money back that my government, my nation is telling me that I owed because I didn't give something I deserved." There's still thousands of dollars in the hole.
Yeah, and that's a great point. That is a phenomenal point. I haven't seen any stories of soldiers like, "No, I'm not paying it." Every single one of them just, well, if I get it that you guys screwed up, and but now you're telling me I have to pay this, so then I'm going to pay it because that's what I was told I have to do. That's the honorable thing to do when, in fact, they shouldn't even have to do it in the first place. But that just speaks to the type of people that we're dealing with. Good people that deserve this money that decided, all right, I'll put my life on the line again. And, you know, it shouldn't be happening to them. It really just is very unfortunate that it's happening to great people.
Yeah, it sucks. And you've got, you know, and like Chap said, you've got these dingleberries, these clowns messing around, trying to delay, trying to stall. And the fact that not only are they saying, oh, yeah, well, we're not sure if we'll be able to back pay. They're saying we're not even sure we're going to be able to stop the process of having to get your money back, let
Which
alone be able to back pay those people.
And utter fucking bullshit. I mean, if you're in the Congress and you're actively telling people in the American public that there's nothing that we can do when all you have to do is watch Schoolhouse Rock and know how a fucking bill goes through the House, like, I'm just a bill on a hill. That maybe that's
I was just
going to
say.
Out.
Is
yeah,
that
like,
it?
I think that's our music for you.
Hey, Paul Ryan. Hill.
I don't hate that.
Instead of Paul Ryan running his bitch ass mouth. Actually fucking put pen to paper, bitch, and make these people get their money back. And I don't even care about the fact that the recruiters knew, because Cons knows, I know. There's not one single piece of paperwork that goes from a recruiter's hand into the enlisted dude's hand right away. That thing went through several layers of officers. It went through at least to a colonel. And so if people are just pin whipping it, it should be the rich motherfuckers that are taking it, not the E4 or E5 that's taking the brunt of the punishment.
And that's one thing I was asking Connor earlier, because, you know, I was trying to understand the issue from more of a militaristic standpoint, guys that have served, guys that have enlisted and reenlisted. And I was like, are these recruiters gigantic scumbags, or are they just trying to do their job? Because I can kind of relate to, we can all relate to trying to juice our numbers and make it look like,
I mean,
you know, like it's,
yeah.
it's
yeah,
something
yeah, yeah.
that's very relatable for people that have worked in sales. Like, yeah, you juice your numbers, try to get through your quota. So it's hard to
it's
try to figure out where, who
thing,
I should be hating, you know what I mean?
But there's 100% checks and balances along the way.
Yep.
There is. And for them to say that it's just a rogue recruiter is absolute horseshit.
Yeah, you saw the one because the one recruiter's
recruiters
name
are
mentioned.
Like E6s, E7s usually.
Maybe
sometimes
an
E5s. Yeah, maybe. But they still have to get an officer's approval.
Yep.
That officer has to get his officer to approve it. So there's still multiple layers of the chain of command that it has to go up. So for them to say we just have some rogue recruiters is – a fucking lie. Like, it's just a lie.
Yeah, because, I mean, you talk to a lot of soldiers, and they'll tell you some story. I feel like the joke in AIT, or once you get to your platoon, is, I'm sure that's what your recruiter told you. You know, it was going to be, like, just like the movies, it was going to be great, when the reality of serving is very different than the picture that you're painted often. And
your
recruiter's
lies goes everywhere but dispersing.
Yeah. yeah. But no, I mean, they have a quota. I think for the most part, recruiters will fudge some things to kind of class it up a little bit, maybe, you know, convince a kid to join. But I don't think for the most part, none of them are too bad of scumbags. I think the one instance that I read about was this one master sergeant who was pushing through a lot of people in California. So she was not the greatest of an individual. But yeah, I mean, they have quotas. Recruiters have quotas they have to hit. And especially when we go back and we talked about during the surge, well, we need 20,000 more people. That doesn't just happen without, you know, maybe making some promises.
Right. And there's no way that these guys, you know, these low-level recruiters can simply just push through dozens of millions of dollars of bonuses and it doesn't have to go through checks and balances. I mean, that's just how it works. So
it's just insane. In order to get an Iraqi campaign medal added to your shit, you have to have four people approve it. And that's just for a piece of cloth. So don't tell me that it was just some rogue recruiter that did it. It was the entire – like, they were all there.
Yeah, they're
and
they all
were
at fault. They're all at fault.
And, I mean, there was one recruiter who pleaded guilty in 2011 to a total of $15.2 million in false claims just through him. So, I mean, there's no fucking way that this guy can just pull all this stuff without anybody else knowing. There's no chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you can't just write those paperwork, send it over to disbursing, and have it direct deposited into somebody's account.
Right.
Otherwise, I would have found a way to do it and got more money.
Seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you would have given me some. I don't know, maybe, if we knew each other.
No.
Probably not. Probably
you take the boys out, I don't know, a couple times.
I did take my boys out whenever I got my bonus. But yeah, so the whole thing is, it just shows how, it is funny though, that one part of this story that goes unnoticed is that it was a nonpartisan issue. Like everybody
I was going to mention that.
Everybody knew that they fucked up, and everybody was like, oh God, we've got to fix this quick. And it just shows how slimy politics is, because they knew about it for 2 years. They didn't care until the public was like, what in the absolute fuck?
Yeah, until we start seeing names in the news about these people getting hardship placed upon them, no one really cares. And the politicians, man.
So and it wasn't really until they put names on it in the LA Times.
I was just
going
to say, yeah, exactly.
Because it's one thing if you're like, 8,000 soldiers are repaying this much money.
Now,
if you
that's
say,
a number.
If you say whatever Johnny Joe Schmuckatelli is had to refinance his house, then people are like, damn.
Yeah, that sucks for Johnny. Yeah, when you humanize it, when we take the war fatigue away, when we take the numbers out of it and we put some human aspects to it, that's when people start to care. And it's unfortunate that it takes it to get to that. But, you know, at least it's being addressed right now. I hope and pray that we can get to a solution to where these soldiers who so bravely decided to re-enlist can be taken care of. But, I mean, with our country and the way politics are, you never know. So I just hold out hope.
Well, I guess that's re-enlistment talk. We'll do a smoother segue with you this time, Riggs.
This feels like the part. This feels like the part where my song gets ready to come on.
Just about.
Well,
I think.
I'm gonna do a smoother segue than that. What's the best place that you ever jerked off at Harvard?
Ooh.
Widener Library.
Wow.
At the library. That's such a Harvard answer.
And like library, I'm thinking of like schools that I've been to. There's actually people in the library at Harvard, I assume.
Yeah.
Great job from Riggs. I'm surprised that he's out there just straight up beating on his penis in the library at Harvard.
Library, no less.
It seems like it's kind of below a Harvard man, right?
I would think so. You would think a Harvard man would have some class, but yeah, I guess he was just worried about those grades.
Yeah, I don't picture my Harvard men beating it.
They don't do it. That's against the rules at Harvard.
Maybe MIT, but not Harvard. Come on, man.
Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, I guess when you have to get it in, you got to get it in. So
You got to get that poison out of you.
Exactly. Get that head thinking straight. There's a piece of advice. If you're thinking about making a bad decision, get that poison out of you first.
So how did you get the – so a lot of people, oddly enough, on Twitter – one of the most common questions that we've gotten, I would think, over the last couple of weeks when we've been posing questions has definitely been about deployment masturbation, a lot of concern about...
Yeah, a lot of odd fascination.
Yeah.
It's very weird, but I guess, you know, the people want to know what the people want to know. Whatever.
So when you weren't eating piss oatmeal, how are you getting the poison out?
Piss oatmeal. That's tasty. I'm really happy to be talking about this because I know my father listens and maybe I'll have to tell my mother not to listen to this episode because that might be a little weird. But anyway, yeah. I'll tweet out another picture, but
not of you doing it.
No,
right?
No, not of me doing it, but of my bunk. So you can kind of understand.
Okay.
As I mentioned last week, I lived in a tent with 12 other dudes. So ideally you try to go in there like a random time. When you knew maybe you'd be the only one in there. Like, you weren't doing it at night when everybody's asleep. Or at least, I don't think I did. But what I would do was I'd go in there, and I had a sheet that went over my bunk. So it almost became like a cave. And that was, like, my personal space. And then I had noise-canceling headphones.
Was the sheet actually a poncho liner?
It was. Half of it was, and then I actually had a bed sheet, too.
Poncho liner is the best piece of gear you got.
That
it really is.
I mean, hands down, that is the best thing you get issued in the military is your poncho liner.
I kind of want one now. I'm going to, after we get off the show, going on Amazon, buying a poncho liner.
You're going to buy yourself a whoopee? Did you guys call them whoopees in the Marines? We call them Wubbies.
No, well, we're a more professional type of organization. We actually call them Poncho Liner. They're correct nomenclature.
Oh, okay. The professional organization from the guy who talked about shitting in a bucket for weeks on end. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha. All right. But no, but anyway, I'd get in there, man, and I'd pull that sheet over, and maybe it was the middle of the day or maybe it was early evening, and I'd try to get it as dark as possible, and I'd throw on my noise-canceling headphones. And here is what is great, because I didn't have Wi-Fi in my tent. I didn't have internet in my tent. We had internet in my office, but not in the tent. So God bless soldiers, because the amount of movies and porn and music that soldiers have on external hard drives could keep the world entertained for at least 500 years. It is impressive.
It is insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, and I mean, when you run out maybe on your hard drive or maybe you're looking for something new, man, you just take a thumb drive to somebody and be like, oh, let me hook up. I need some.
It was basically like the troop version of baseball cards.
Basically, yeah. It's like, yeah, you got any new stuff? Because people would get emailed things or sent hard drives or what have you. Believe me, soldiers are very resourceful.
Passed down when people are like, when you're doing less seat rights, like, which basically means when you're like briefing the unit who's going to replace you on what to do. A lot of times that will be in your little gear bag that you hand them. Like, you'll need to know, this is a house that you need to stay away from. There's bad dudes in this area. Check this out. And also, here's 500 gigs of porn.
And I tell you what, I mean, it's just good for morale is what it comes down to. I mean, you can't, especially like I was out on a base. There were no women there. So I didn't see a woman for a 6 month stretch. I mean, other than the Iraqi women that I was encountering out on patrols, but those women are all covered up and whatever. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, and you try to be real respectful and not even talk to them.
Exactly, exactly. That's against their culture. So, I mean, I basically had no interaction with women for 6 months, except for, I guess, via porn. So, yeah, just like I was saying, I put my...
That's healthy. That's a healthy thought.
Yeah, that's a great way to go through life, right?
Yeah.
Probably accounts for how normal I am right now. But, yeah, just throw those noise-canceling headphones on. It's like you're not even there anymore. You're not even in Iraq. You're in your own little world with Lisa Ann or, you know, Asa Akira or whoever, and you're just having yourself a good old time. And then you go back to work.
Now, see, because I'm an honorable gentleman, I actually never masturbated on deployment.
I don't believe that even for a second. That might be the biggest lie you've ever told me in your life.
Yeah, it probably is. But my favorite overall masturbation story that I've ever heard, and it wasn't even my story, so I'm telling it secondhand.
Oh, I'll tell you another story. That was just my method. I have a story. But
okay, well, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, so I was missing my driver one day, and it was his day off. But we had to get spun up and go on a mission kind of unexpectedly, but it was the middle of the day, right around just after lunchtime. So I'm like, I'm going all over. I'm going to the aid station where he used to hang out with one of the other soldiers. He's not there. He's not in the gym. He's not in the talk. I can't find him anywhere. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll go to his tent. And so I walk into his tent. And again, I told you, soldiers are resourceful. You know what a fleshlight is?
Of course.
Of course. This gentleman had fashioned a fleshlight out of a water bottle with, like, wet paper towels and some jellies and I don't know, whatever. It was homemade. And
just basically good old troop ingenuity.
Bingo. Bingo. Making chicken salad.
Happen.
Making chicken salad out of chicken shit. And
just
I walk
enough ranch, baby. All you need is enough ranch.
So I walk into his tent, and he definitely thought nobody was in there because he had his laptop open. He was standing up just in kind of like the middle of the tent going to town on this water bottle, and I wasn't about to, like, walk up to him. So there was another soldier's bunk right there. He had a boot, so I just picked up the boot and threw it at him, and he was startled as shit, and he's, like, his pants around his ankles. He fell down, you know. Pulled himself up, and the whole time I'm just standing there pretty like, all right, well, whenever you can get yourself up and get yourself together, I need to talk to you.
Sounds like he was already up.
Brumch. So, yeah, that's probably the best masturbation story that I encountered while I was deployed. But what do you got?
So the best one I've heard, I wasn't firsthand, but this story just got to be told because it needs to be out there. So there is a dude who is in Marine Corps boot camp. like, so during chow hall time, like when everybody goes to eat, one of the things that everybody has to do is leave one, maybe two recruits behind to watch, because you still have your 80 or whatever weapons that are attached to your bed. So you have a weapon watch. So this dude was, we had, it's called early chow, late chow. So the early chow guy goes before everybody else in the platoon eats. So he goes like 5-10 minutes before, eats as fast as he can, runs his little ass back, and then he's there for the rest of the time everybody's eating. Late chow is the opposite. Everybody goes, late chow waits for early chow to get back before he could go. So something happened to early chow. Early chow got sick and got, he like passed out or some shit and had to go to the hospital or to the aid station or whatever. So the drill instructor was the one that came back instead of early chow.
Uh-oh.
Well, late chow was standing over the trash can by the drill instructor's hut, like right outside the drill instructor's hut, stroking his little Jimmy Johnson.
So, I mean, at what point does that kid think, like, this is a good idea?
I don't know, man. Like, the entire time I was at boot camp, I wasn't horny, like, at all. Like, yeah. Not at all, like, for the 13 weeks. So, cause most of the time, just because you're so exhausted.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So the dude is sitting there jerking his Johnson over top of the trash can. And the drill instructor walks in, and he's like, what in the sweet fuck are you doing? And whenever a drill instructor talks to you, you're supposed to immediately go to the position of attention.
And he was already there.
And scream your answer. You're supposed to scream your answer at the top of your lungs. So this dude, penis, hard as it's going to get.
At attention.
Goes to the position of attention to answer the question. So the drill instructor makes him strip down there while he's still like in the middle of like masturbating. So he's still got, I'm sure his penis didn't stay hard long. So it goes down. The best part is that evening, anytime somebody would have to go use the restroom during the evening, every time somebody walked by, and the amount of water that you have to drink before you go to bed at Marine Corps boot camp is ungodly. You have to drink like a half a gallon of water before you go to bed. So people are constantly getting up to piss. So this dude that did it had to stay on fire watch for 4 hours, the longest that they could actually put him on. So every time somebody walked
by.
And
what's fire watch?
Fire watch is like you're keeping guard over everybody else is sleeping, and you are watching. You're counting the weapons every 15, 20 minutes to make sure that all the weapons are there, all the recruits are there. Everybody's basically accounted for. You're like the accountability dude.
Yep.
So he's sitting there. But every time somebody passes him to go to the head, he has to scream at the top of his lung, this recruit will not masturbate while in uniform. So for 4 hours, like, people are going to piss and somebody's walking in front of him like every 2 minutes or so. And for 4 hours, he's just like, this recruit will not masturbate. And you have a drill instructor that's in the office that's awake all the time because they don't go to sleep.
Yep.
So if he sees somebody goes, he knows that he's going to get smoked. So he'd be like, say it again, if he didn't say it loud enough. Like, so this dude's like, this recruit will not masturbate while in uniform. And if he doesn't scream it loud enough, say it again.
Yeah, and then it's pissing off his buddies because his buddies are trying to sleep. They don't need every, 20 minutes somebody screaming in their ear, waking their ass up. So that probably got him in a lot of trouble.
And that's when you kind of wish that you're the recruit, where's my penis kid? Because then the drill instructor probably wouldn't even know that you're masturbating. So maybe
that
it would happen.
Worked out well. Oh, well.
Yeah. So masturbation time, it happens any and everywhere. And you'll talk to dudes. If you hear them talking online, both of our parents listen. So it's kind of weird to talk about masturbation
very
to the whole.
So.
Yeah. So, but they're going to know. I mean, I'm sure I have two kids, so I'm sure they know what happens. But
I'm a good Catholic. We don't do that. Oh, wait, I guess I just said I did. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll cut that first part where I tell my whole story.
But, I mean, I would constantly have young troops that would get in trouble for the dumbest shit, like masturbating in different places, porta potties, fucking anywhere, man. Like, you just knew that if you had a junior troop, garrison, deployed, garrison means, like, back on your base stateside, garrison or deployed, that they were beating their meat off because they just do dumb shit in the dumbest places at the dumbest times. And oftentimes, they don't even know what the time of day is. Was that your experience as an officer?
Yeah, a little bit. They just scream random things like "Good morning," and it's like, "What? Good morning? It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What are you talking about?" Get your head on straight, dude.
Yeah, so like, young enlisted dudes are notorious for forgetting what time of day it is, I guess. And so you're taught, very first thing you're taught is that you give a proper greeting of the day. Like, there's always a proper greeting. So it's either "Good morning, sir," "Good afternoon, sir," "Good evening, sir." And for Marines, we braced it off of "Have you eaten chow yet?" So if you've eaten breakfast, it's "Good morning, sir." If you've eaten lunch, "Good afternoon, sir." If you've eaten dinner, it's "Good evening, sir." So, but they always fuck it up, and they fuck it up even later. So I used to work at the dog school here, and I would get put on duty where it was my responsibility to check on all the different students here. Without fail, every time I would walk in at like 21:30, 9:30 at night, I would walk in, and the little Lance Corporal that was on duty would be like, "Good evening," or "Good morning, Staff Sergeant." Be like, "Come on, dude. Like, it's 9:30 at night, man."
Yeah, but he was probably, I don't know, he probably gets in his head like, it's after dinner, but we're coming up on breakfast in a few hours, and they just put their own brains in a pretzel. Because, I mean, when you're a lower enlisted guy, man, you're just like, your head's always racing because you just want to do what you're supposed to be told, and you don't want to mess up because you don't want to get in trouble and you don't want to get your friends in trouble. So sometimes when you're thinking too much, your brain is just clouded and you will say dumb shit like that. And it's unbelievable how many times the people will make the same mistake more than once.
Oh, no doubt. Like, there was a kid that I had in boot camp, and this dude would constantly talk about how he was an Eagle Scout. I'm sure there's plenty of Eagle Scouts at West Point, right?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we got a lot of.
So did they get fucked with a lot because they acted like they knew a bunch of stuff?
Yeah, some of them, they think like, "Oh, I'm an Eagle Scout, I can do all this stuff and know how to camp," and, you know, no disrespect to guys who've been Eagle Scouts, you know, it's a great organization, but I mean, I just think like there are some transferable skills, but I think being in the Boy Scouts is just a little bit different than being in the military.
Oh, yeah, and one of my drill instructors made that abundantly clear to a dude who constantly would tell like personal stories about being an Eagle Scout. So we were going out to one of our field operations, and in Paris Island, there's lots of pine trees. So, you know, like on pine trees, you have little pine needles. So you mm-hmm. can sweep them up, and they're everywhere. They get in everything. But they make like a comfortable bed if you make it out right.
Sure.
Like whenever you're camping and shit. So this dude was constantly talking about the needles and how to lay them in this direction so they all go in the same direction so then you don't get poked nearly as much, which is – that's a good fun fact. It's a good tip to have, you know?
Sure,
like, so he's – so this Eagle Scout dude is just thinking that he's helping everybody out. Well, the drill instructor has finally fucking had enough by overhearing, because usually they let, like, the recruits talk to each other when we're doing, like, our team-building stuff and don't say anything.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that's also part of the team-building process. You know, you got to kind of –
and you establish leaders that way.
Exactly, like, exactly. If you're just constantly interjecting yourself, then, you know, they're not going to learn any sort of leadership qualities. So, yeah, I understand that, why they would do that.
But you also know that drill instructors and people who are in those enlisted positions of leadership – they take pride in how they have trained you as well. So they're training mm-hmm. you this one way. That's the way they expected you to do it, especially at boot camp. You do it exactly the way that I told you to do, and you don't deviate from that because I know best because I've been doing it forever type situation.
Yep.
So he finally gets tired of Eagle Scout bro. And so he's like, "Come here, motherfucker." He's like, "So tell me about your time as an Eagle Scout." And so the kid starts talking to him. He's like, "Well, sir, this recruit, blah, blah." He's like, no. "Say it like a fucking eagle."
Oh, so fantastic.
The kid's face is like, what? Like, the face just looks ridiculous. He's like, "Squall at me like you're a fucking eagle, recruit." And so he's just sitting there like screaming like a bird. And he's like, "Now take those fucking pine needles that you just made and build a goddamn nest." So he's taking this and making like this huge nest. He's like, "No, go get it. Go get me all the fucking pine cones that you can find and take all your little buddies with you." So all the recruits, like all like 50 of us, are like running through this pine tree forest, like looking for as many pine trees as we can, pine cones as we possibly can, to put them in this one recruit's nest. And he's like, now sit on the fucking nest and hatch your babies. So
did he want to take a shit or something? What was he going to do at that point?
No, he's like, the dude's just sitting there, and he's like, good afternoon, eagle. And it's just like, caw, 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 wow. Like over and over again, like making like eagle noises. And who even knows what an eagle sounds like? But he's like squalling over and over again. And the fact that the drill instructor doesn't make a face throughout all that is
That's the best part.
Mind-blowing. Yeah. Like they can do the most ridiculous shit ever, and their faces don't budge.
Yeah, and something like that, I mean, that doesn't take 5 minutes. That's a pretty involved hazing scenario. That
It was like an hour and 30-minute long process. The amount of pine cones that we had was ungodly.
Yeah, but the drill instructor, man, he's committed to that shit. And then it's just, you know, all right.
But really, he's there at night. What the fuck else is he going to do for the next 10 hours? Because he knows he's not going to go to sleep.
Exactly. Might as well keep himself occupied and enjoy yourself. Yeah. And then maybe that kid will learn to maybe stop talking about the Eagle Scouts so goddamn much, because no one really gives a shit, because you're a Marine now. You're no longer an Eagle Scout. So
yeah,
keep that shit to yourself.
Just give the tips. You don't have to give the Eagle Scout portion of where you learned it from, because nobody wants to get credit.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we're going to do a new segment.
Ooh.
This is a new segment time.
New segment alert.
We're going to see how it goes, but we're going to do a Badass of the Week. Are you excited about the Badass of the Week?
Yeah, because I think there are a lot of badasses out there. I mean, there definitely is.
And yeah. I'll tell you, you want to kind of go over how this came about, what we were talking about yesterday?
Well, I'm going to let you go because I don't remember.
Okay. So you constantly hear stories about like Chris Kyle and some of the more popular soldiers, Marines, sailors, airmen of our day, but you don't really hear too much anymore about the World War II guys, the Vietnam guys, the war in Korea guys, and you don't even hear about some of the lesser known stories from the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq. So what we kind of want to do is highlight some of those guys who you might not know, or you might not have heard of, or you might not know that you've heard of them. So Connor, you want to talk about our very first Badass of the Week?
His name was Robert A. Hoover, Bob Hoover. He was a World War II fighter pilot, and he passed away this week at the age of 94. And he was a goddamn aviation legend. And that's astounding to me that he's such a legend. And I pride myself on knowing a lot of history. I'm unfortunate. I didn't really know about him.
And we use adjectives like legend a lot, but this is like legit legend.
This legend is legit status. Legend. So he had flown 50 missions with the Army's 52nd Fighter Group in Sicily during World War II. And then in February 1944, he was shot down by Germans, and he was put into a prisoner of war camp. Then he proceeded to break out of that camp, which is no small feat by itself. On top of that, he stole a Nazi plane, and he flew that shit to the Netherlands.
Yeah, this is after he had been a prisoner of war for 16 months. Yeah. Prisoner of war for 16 months. So the weakness that you experience after you've been a prisoner of that war that much, because, spoiler alert, when you're a prisoner of war, they don't actually feed you that well. So he's probably incredibly weak, jumps a fence, finds a plane, and just happens to know, because he's such a badass pilot, he could just figure out how to fly like any plane he was ever in.
Yeah, well, not only could he fly the plane, to just have the wherewithal to know where he was and get himself to the Netherlands, because who knows how much fuel he had or anything, or how far he could go, and then to know, okay, I'm in the Netherlands, I can land because I'm in a safe zone. That's unbelievable. And what really was remarkable about this gentleman was some of the other names you might have heard and the things they had to say about him. Chuck Yeager, you'll know from, he was the pilot who was the first to break the sound barrier. He said he was the greatest pilot I ever saw.
Chuck Yeager is a phenomenal Twitter follower too. He puts people in body bags like every day.
Oh, I didn't even know he was on Twitter.
Dude, yeah, man. All right,
I'm gonna start following him.
He's like a top 15 follow on Twitter for me, because anytime he tweets, he doesn't tweet often, but anytime he does, he puts some young whippersnapper in a body bag with a quickness.
And then another gentleman, you might have heard of him, Buzz Aldrin. I don't know, maybe he walked on the moon. He said, when he died, we lost an aviation pioneer today. He could do magical things with an airplane. He was the best. And I was thinking about this and these gentlemen saying these words about him, and it's kind of like I related to, you know, a lot of times if a kid is elected captain of a team, be it college or pros, whatever, they often say the greatest compliment is for your peers to think that much of you that they elect you to that. So for Chuck Yeager and Buzz Aldrin to say this guy was the best, he was amazing, that's
yeah, it's
just
essentially,
unbelievable.
It's essentially like Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle being like, man, Willie Mays was a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know, and I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this tidbit when he crash landed or landed in the Netherlands. He was chased by farmers holding pitchforks because they thought he was a German because he was flying the Nazi plane. So yeah. On top of all that, he avoided the damn pitchforks. So
yeah, and how do you explain that to people while they're chasing you? Like, actually, no, man. Like, it's me, your boy Bob. Like,
it's Bob. Relax, it's Bob. Yeah,
it's
I mean,
not Adolf. It's not. I know this looks bad. I know this looks bad right now, but just allow me to explain myself.
And then the other thing that was crazy. So after his extensive military career, he became a pilot in air shows, and his trademark at air shows was he would shut off both engines and then hurtle the plane towards the earth and then pull up and turn the engines back on at the last second. Like, last I checked, that's probably not advisable. If you want to survive in a plane, so you probably shouldn't shut your engines off, willfully. So that's just, I mean,
yeah, I think
Bob
that's
Hoover.
Pilot. I think that's like pilot 101.
Yeah,
those
keep those engines on. That'll help. So Bob Hoover, badass of the week for sure.
Yeah, there it is, Bob Hoover. So what we'll do is each time we have a badass of the week, if there is like YouTube videos, I'll throw it up there on the blog on barstoolsports.com, and you can check that out. It's going to be a really good time, man. So,
yeah, because like you said, I think, I honestly, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't think we were going to have a shortage of badasses of the week anytime soon.
Oh, no, that's a good thing about being American is there's plenty of badasses to go around.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So just to reiterate for the ending of the show, go to iTunes, subscribe if you're not subscribing, if you're being like a psychopath and just going to it and listening to it every week, subscribe, review, and I'll send you a shirt if it's really awesome.
Yeah, don't come with some weak ass review either. I need to see a quality review. It's got to be more than one sentence.
Needs to be a good review, and we'll read them on the site too. The ones that actually win. And don't forget, get your tickets by using SeatGeek with the promo code CHAPS if you've never used it before. Grab tickets to the Air Force Army games. Come drink beers with me and your boy, and we will be hanging out, doing a live podcast, doing Facebook Live. We're going to be doing it up, man. Yeah. So come out, and there's going to be more stuff coming. So if you're a stoolie who lives in the New Jersey, New York area, get back into rucking shape. Start now, because we're going to be having some stuff come down the road where we're going to get together, and this whole badass of the week is going to be part of it. Also, if you live in the D.C. area, because heads up, we're coming to the Army-Navy game too. So that's going to be a complete shit show. And that one's going to involve the whole crew, I'm pretty sure, of young Mr. Dave Portnoy, Big Cat, PFT Commenter, and the Zero Block 30 boys. So
and, I actually, a little birdie told me that one Erica Nardini might be in attendance for that Army-Navy game too.
Well, then we'll have to be on our best behavior if the boss is around.
Uh-oh. But yeah, no, a lot of good things coming down. We appreciate the support. Keep subscribing, keep listening, keep giving us your feedback. I love your feedback. I think Chaps loves your feedback. We appreciate the kind words. We won't retweet them, but we do appreciate them. So thank you very much for listening, and Chaps, thanks, buddy.
All right, we'll see you guys again next week.